I would like to introduce tonight's speaker, and I don't have my list.
Michelle from Santee.
Michelle from Santee.
Michelle M. from San Diego.
Santee.
It says San Diego. This one wasn't mine. That was say it right there.
I see that. I do. Okay. Absolutely. That's what it said. Everybody's messing with this thing. Good evening, Michelle Alcoholic.
Hi, Michelle.
Welcome, Isaac. Where's Isaac? Hey, buddy. It's just you and me tonight, man. I'd like to say happy 90 days to our 90-day recipient, Ernie. It's so nice somebody gave you a truck. Oh, now Ernie's 1 year. I'm sorry. Keith. Oh, my God. Ernie, congratulations. On 1 year, he greeted us at my car, our car, and being of service. And then 15 years to Bob, and 41 years to Kevin. When did you get sober? When you were two? Good golly. I'll tell you what, you stay sober long enough, you don't look your age, right? I want to thank everybody who came out to support me. I love you. You're my peeps. And I always think, you know, there's a lot of people here, including our 41-year recipient that has a lot more time than I do. But you're stuck with me because they asked me. I thought Babs would share, but, you know, she doesn't want to. So I'm trying to find my timer so that I can stop on time. So my sobriety date is January 15th of 1990. I have a sponsor as a sponsor. My home group is the Women's Attitude of Gratitude, which happens to be a Zoom meeting. So if you're a Zoom hater, sorry. One of my grandbabies is a Zoom baby. And Isaac, if you hear nothing tonight, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And I am here this long because I did that, those steps. And I asked for help. I got it. You need a sponsor. You need a big book. You need a home group. Write your sobriety date in ink in your book, by the way. And you need to work the steps. And my first sponsor said to me, Michelle, you don't ever have to drink or use again or feel the way you're feeling. But you are going to have to do a few things around here. And I don't know about you, but I like results before I do things. Right? If I could pay for a personal trainer that would send me the results, I'd be on that list, right? And so it's just not how it works here, you know, that I was blessed that my sponsor literally lived two blocks away from my house. I could walk to her house. That was a total God thing. Because if she was farther away, who knows, you know? I would go to the, you know, my alcoholism has a hell of a marijuana smoking problem. And so I'm from Helena, Montana. That's where I got sober. And I have walked in a blizzard to my dealer's house. No joke. I've driven on nasty roads to get what I wanted. But when it came to getting sober, I was going to the meetings closest to my house. I didn't want to be inconvenienced, you know. My sponsor lived two blocks from my house. I have never had to work as hard here as I did to stay drunk and stoned. Or at least I don't think so. But I'm willing to work as hard as I did. I'm not stupid enough, though, to walk in a blizzard now. But you don't ever have to drink or use again if you don't want to. But you do have to do some things around here. So when I think about speaking it, I get a little nervous because A, a bunch of people I know showed up. But B, I don't know if there's enough time in a day for me to tell you how much I love and am passionate about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised by wolves, is what I'll say, and they did the best they could, and it was not that good. And so when I found alcohol at the age of almost 17, thank you, God, because alcohol and drugs saved my life until I could get here, really. You know, I needed something. I wanted to kill myself at 10 years old and 13 years old. And God, that sense of ease and comfort, that relief I got from that Boone's Farm Tickle Pink. Some of you know that stuff, right? And, you know, I was with my best friend Stacy in another town, and I, you know, remember I'm from Montana. I could walk in and lie and say I was, I think the drinking age was 19, and I could buy liquor. I didn't need an ID. And so we bought some alcohol, and I drank it all. Nobody told me, you know, have a couple of glasses. I just took the bottle and I drank it all. And then the next night I drank it all and added some beer. And then what I was to happen the rest of the time I drank was I got really, really sick. And I got really, really sick. Some of you have heard this story, my mom's fried rice. And never once did I ask her to do it again. I'd like more fried rice, please. You know, do you have fried rice? I'd like some fried rice. But I'll tell you what, if fried rice did for me what alcohol did for me, I would be having a lot of fried rice. And I will pay that price of hugging the toilet and swearing, you know, I'm never gonna do this again. Until I'm doing it again. I was a periodic drinker, which means periodically I got really, really drunk. I quit drinking all the time. Sometimes I went 6 weeks, 3 months. I think I went a year once. Now, remember, I had a really bad pot problem, so it wasn't like I was alcohol and drug-free. I just wasn't drunk right then. But I always wanted to drink. And whether I put it in my body or not, that obsession of the mind, that wanting to feel other than I was. I like to say that what it did for me is it put this thing between you and I. It turned down the volume on the world. It made you a little bit farther away, and I could live among you. I didn't have to like you, and I assumed you didn't like me. Like, that's how I roll, like, to everybody, you know? So in my first year from that first bottle of Boone's Farm Tickle Pink, I got fired from a job because I didn't show up to work because I got too drunk and I couldn't go to work. And of course I was sick because that's what I do when I drink. And so I called in sick. And I got fired because I wasn't homesick. I was somewhere else. And then I ran away from home for the second time. This time I was not sober. And I lived at a group home. And then I was sent to live with my sister. And I stayed sober for 6 months. And I had a chemical dependency, or I had a therapist, and I told her my whole sob story. And she said, you know, I don't think you have a problem with alcohol and drugs. I think you have a parent problem. I'm like, that's right. I don't know if you guys have, like, the sponsees. I know I did this with my sponsor. If I just explain it right, you'll get it, right? And she got it. Like, they're the problem. And so I ran on that for a long time. I picked up my first husband in a bar after I moved back from my sister's after not drinking for 6 months. And I hung on to him with all my might for almost 14 years. And I could point to him, and his drinking was way worse. He was not a periodic drinker. He was a get drunk anytime he could, all he could. The answer is yes, what do you have? That's the kind of drug addict he, an alcoholic he is. So I looked really good. I looked like I did not have a problem. But come to find out, you don't live with somebody like that and party with someone like that if you don't also have a problem, right? So, you know, I went from good girl, never lied, never skipped school, to getting drunk, getting fired. I did eventually quit school. Because when I was with my sister, the school closed, they had a strike or something. So I didn't even finish the 11th grade, you know. And my mom said, well, I don't want you going to school if you're going to get wasted at school. Yes. Right? Like, oh, this is working out. I don't know if you know this, but a high school diploma is helpful. I'm just saying. And so I did get my GED because somebody paid me to go get my GED. You know, so at no point did I think I had a problem. And in Bill's story, it talks about Bill and Lois, they would build their life up and they would tear it back down again. They'd build it up and they'd tear it back down again. And that's what Jerry, my first husband, and I did. We would, you know, get a great idea. We're going to go to school and get a bunch of student loans. And we would get, I don't know, like a lot of money in cash, in a little lockbox, and we'd like spend it all on it wasn't food, right? And we'd go to school, and he flunked out, but I got straight A's. But if you wanted me to do anything that I allegedly learned in that time to save your life, you better write your last testament, because I can't help you. I don't remember what I learned. I got sober to get divorced. I didn't get sober because I went, this sucks. This is terrible. Because I was just in between good ideas, truly. I went to the doctor because I had a lot of anxiety, and I was arguing with him a lot. And, you know, by this time, we've gone through the school, we've torn life and down, and now I'm in a job at mental health services, which I'm, like, checking people in, and I'm thinking, shit, I'm on the wrong side of this document. Right? Like, you know, I should be feeling, I'd been a patient there before, actually, because I had anger problems, which was true. If you don't bring my mail to me, I will hunt you down. Where you're having lunch, actually. So, right, yeah, not good. So I was having a really hard time, and so I went to the doctor, and the doctor, instead of giving me drugs, because that's what I wanted, I just, you know, I need to add something to the mix, okay? And he said, so what's going on, Michelle? He'd known me since I was a child, like 12 years old, and my mom had worked there as a nurse, and so I told him everything he was doing. Because obviously, just like my parents were the problem, he was the problem. Because you see, if you're drunk like me, I am not responsible. It is the job, it's the him, it's the where I came from, I don't make enough money, I don't live in the right place, I'm not thin enough, as one of my sponsors said, I'm not thin enough, smart enough, anything enough. You know, and obviously I have to blame people around me. And so Reg, the doctor said, well, he's probably using, but what about you? And I got as honest as I could. I didn't even talk about alcohol. Oh, I smoke a joint a day. And I know this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but I only have the one story. Sorry. And this is what I believe about my alcoholism, is it really doesn't care how I consume it. Whether I smoke it, I drink it, shoot it in my arm, poke it up my ass, it doesn't matter, right? It is alcoholism. I don't want to be wherever I'm at. I want to feel other than I am. And so I told Reg that, and what Reg did is he said, I need you to go to Al-Anon, 6 meetings, no judgments, and I want you to go see this chemical dependency counselor. And I was desperate. And what he said was, it will help you with him. I love it when people buy into my delusion. You know, if he just said, this will help you because you're the problem, I'd have left just like I left the therapist that wanted me to get sober before. You need to get sober before we'll work together. I don't like to work on my issues sober, thank you. I mean, I have issues. At least I should have a buffer, right? So he said, this will help you with him. And so I went to Al-Anon and I collected all the literature. And I went home and I cried, God help me, he's an alcoholic. And as I was, I'm sure, getting high. And that was my prayer, God help me, he's an alcoholic. A couple days later, I went and saw the chemical dependency guy, Jim. And he said, you know, if you want to get divorced, you might want to get sober. And the truth is, I had quit drinking every time I drank since I was 18 because I got sick. And I had tried to stop getting high over and over and over again. And Isaac, I don't know about you, but it stopped working. It was not doing for me what it used to do for me. The last time, on January 14th of 1990, I got high. I was paranoid. My heart was racing. I didn't like the way I felt. But I knew, like I'd always known, that if there was anything in the house, I was going to do it. That was just it. My last drink, this at the end was the only relief I got. This is a drink, the idea in my head of how good it's going to feel, and my hand on it. Because once I drank it, it wasn't the same anymore. I didn't get that sense of ease and comfort, but I still got sick. You know, I'll pay the price if I'm still getting the reward. And I'd been paying the price for a couple of years, and I was not getting the reward from anything I was doing. So he said, you know, I'll make another appointment with you, which I thought was really interesting of him, because most people just adjusted to my demands, right? I'm not getting sober, but I'll go to therapy. You know, but this guy said, I'll make another appointment because he seems serious. And so the last time I got loaded was the 14th of January of 1990. My sobriety date's the 15th. The only difference between all the other times and then was the guy, when I saw him 2 days later, said, go find somebody you know that got sober. And I knew somebody that got sober. My friend had gotten sober, Pat. And Pat and I used to get high together and drink together. And what I watched was Pat stayed sober when her daughter committed suicide. And I don't know about you, but I was fascinated and in awe of how big does your God have to be to not pick up when your kid dies? You know what I mean? Like that was just... Isn't there a list around here that says, if your kid kills themselves, you can drink. If your sponsor dies, obviously you can drink. You know, if your spouse... just this whole list of things that I get to. Well, guess what? There's no list. None. At least if you want long-term sobriety and you want to be sane and sober and at peace. Because if you hold out that little nugget out there, I can't live through this if this happens... That's going to happen. Guess what? That's going to happen. And then it'll be you and God. And either you're going to drink or you're not going to drink. Because I don't know about you, but if you've read this book, it says over and over and over again, I'm beyond human aid. Which means at 3:00 in the morning, when my ass is falling off, if I've not stayed connected with you and worked the steps and got a relationship with a God, what am I going to do? I might be able to call my sponsor or somebody that might pick up the phone. We do have central office. We're lucky. But the point of the whole deal is to get me to a higher power that's going to relieve me of that obsession to drink. And at 3:00 in the morning, which is about the time I found out my brother died, I'm going to be okay. I'm not going to drink, no matter what. There's no list for me. And Pat taught me that. Pat stayed sober after her daughter had committed suicide. And I've seen that over and over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous, is that people stay sober. I may or may not get to the steps tonight. Who knows? I wanted to say, you know, a few of the things that have happened. That ex-husband became an ex at around almost 14 years. He was out drinking and using, and... I only found out because the husband of the she he was with called me. And I was 6 years sober then, and the thing that was lost in that divorce was his sobriety. See, I can get another house, another job, another sorry baby him. I can get, or her, you know what I mean? All those things I can replace. But I don't know if I can replace my sobriety. You know, I watch people go in, out, and then they don't come back. If I asked you all to raise your hand if you know somebody that died of alcoholism, most of us would raise our hands. This disease is chronic, progressive, and fatal. And I love that we laugh here a lot, but I don't have the in-out grace period. I'm pretty sure if I went back out, I'm not coming back. I wouldn't want to come back. And the reason that's not even on the horizon is because I know from my head to my toes that alcohol and drugs don't work for me. I had my share. I know I smoked my share. I drank my share. You know, I had my share of cigarettes. You know, I was always worried about my share. So in Bill and my husband that I have now, we've been together 15 years married and over 20 years together. And he's sober 39 years. And we have a sober marriage, and Monty talks about this. It's a wonderful thing. And I don't tell him to call his sponsor or work the steps, and he doesn't tell me to call my sponsor or work the steps. He's like, hell no. Ah, hell no. I'm a never get any again. Because we know that what we come together and have is because of our own sobriety and our own relationship with higher power, not because we work on it so much. 10 years ago, Bill got diagnosed with throat cancer, and we went through that treatment. And then 5 years ago, I got diagnosed with breast cancer, and we went through that treatment. And then a year ago, his oldest daughter got diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, and she went through treatment, and he lost his mind for a while, understandably. You know, like both of us are like, what the hell? Like either one of us would do cancer over again to save the children. You know what I mean? And at the moment, she is cancer-free. We're all cancer-free. Thank you. That is the grace of God and Western science, okay? And my friend Jeanette's here and done with cancer treatment and cancer-free, and Scott's cancer-free, and Monty's cancer-free. And but the big deal is not one of us, not the caretakers or the people that were sick, drank or used. Not, it wasn't even up for discussion. That's what sobriety does, is it's no longer on the menu. You know, it wouldn't have made anything better. So sometimes I get a little annoyed. I don't know if you can imagine this, but that this is a textbook, okay? Mine's well used because I've had a lot of sponsees. But point being is right off the bat, it tells me that this is about 100 men and women who have, you know, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and to show us precisely how they have done it is what this book is about. That doesn't sound mysterious to me, right? Precise. I want my brain surgeon, my heart surgeon to be precise, right? So then it comes on and it tells me that it's going to give me clear-cut directions. Clear-cut, no mystery. If you have the cake and you follow the directions, you're going to get a cake. In AA, if you get in the book with a sponsor that knows what's in the book and you follow the directions to the best of your ability, one day at a time, you're going to stay sober. One day at a time. Now, I know. Isaac's like, but I want to be 10 tonight. It's not going to happen tonight. But if you stay here one day at a time, you'll get 10 years. And then you get 15, you'll get 20 and 25. And it'll just get, it'll get easy. The thinking about drinking doesn't occur. It's getting through life on life's terms. Kids having cancer, us having cancer, being at my dad's deathbed, which is a privilege. You've sat by your parent when they died, or a friend. That's a privilege. So we get precise and clear cut. And then it tells me, before that on 20, it's going to show me specifically how they have recovered. I do think Alcoholics Anonymous is magic, but it does have directions, okay, in the book. It tells me how to do it. I just can't find them because I'm alcoholic. That's why I need a sponsor to be like my tour guide through the book, right? You know, and Bill fancied himself a writer, which he was, maybe. But he says things like, you know, put it before you in black and white, which means write it down. But, you know, it would have helped if he just said write it down, right? You know. So step one to me is I can't do it. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. The only step that talks about alcohol at all is step one, first half of the first step. So how do I live in my body, in this world, without that buffer anymore? And that's what the other 11 and a half steps are about. I am more powerless today probably than I was when I got sober, because, you know, it's not my alcoholism didn't go away. And if you go get all scientific, my body has even fewer enzymes to digest the alcohol that it doesn't digest in the, you know what I mean? I don't process alcohol like normal people. You know, so my life's unmanageable. I really tried to manage it by my managing you guys. You know what I mean? That was my idea of managing. I'm going to see how you, like, do it. Step two is, you know, the God idea does work. If the way I'm living life is crazy, which everything I own, including my wedding ring, was in the pawn shop, I was at my job, and I was really on the phone all the time talking to people. I was not at my job. based on those two facts, my ideas don't work, God idea does, I'll do a third step, which is merely a decision. I've never been to Paris, but I've decided to go to Paris, but I've not bought a ticket. I've not gotten on the plane. I didn't pack for it. I didn't get off the plane. I've not been to Paris, but I decided to go to Paris, right? So the third step is merely another mental exercise that based on all these facts about, you know, this is how Michelle's life is run by Michelle. So if I want that third step to be a reality, I have to do 4 through 9. I have to do the rest of the steps, which I don't know about you if you've read the steps, but making a searching and fearless moral inventory is kind of drastic. You know, the steps are not for pussies. It really is not for people with a weak stomach or, you know, like, I don't want to look bad. I'm going to look bad here. You know, if I'm going to look bad anywhere, I'll look bad here, I'll look bad sober. But 4 through 9 is kind of drastic, right? Because I didn't have character defects. You had character defects. But I loved writing my resentments. Because I didn't know there was another part to that, right? I didn't know that I had to write about my part. So a real apt description of me, just going over this with one of my sponsees, you can see the 4-step and this whole selfishness, self-centeredness that I believe is the root of my troubles is broken apart because I was often referred to this part of the book by my sponsor because I like to run the show. So I love where it says, the first thing apparent was that the world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. That's how I rolled. That's how my life was. And then you tell me it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. In fact, it might kill me. But wait a minute, aren't there justifiable resentments? Are there people that really deserve my wrath? Well, apparently not. But that's where I was stuck. I was stuck. I was stuck. And now you give me this beautiful key. It says, we returned back to Lisford, held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. How could I escape? I have to be able to find the truth about my part. I expect people to act well. I keep showing up for harm. I'm not nice to you. If, you know, remember when they had macros where you just hit a button and it would put a sentence in? Some of us old people remember that. That was, you know, we're not that interesting. We do the same thing over and over, and I like to talk shit about people, and I like to build a posse, and so you don't like them either. You know what I mean? Like, that's how I roll, is everybody's not going to like you because I don't like you or whatever. And so that was often. I had to make amends to everybody at work because I talked smack about this one lady. I had to make amends to her. So, you know, referring to that list, we learned this template for that worked for the rest of the steps 10 and 11, nightly review and the in-the-moment inventory, where have I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Where was I at fault? What could I have done differently? That we're just getting rid of that log jam, that big beaver dam we've built up over the years with the 4-step. We're just like blowing that out of there. And then step 10, in the moment when I step on Susie's toes, I may or may not immediately apologize to Susie. It may take me a minute. I get better now because I know right away, like had this nurse that pissed me off. I wasn't very nice to her, and before I left that appointment, I apologized to her. And not only I apologized to her, I apologized in front of her colleagues because that's where I was causing the harm. I'm all about, if I cause harm, I make amends at that level too. If I embarrass you in front of everybody, we're going to be apologizing to you in front of everybody if that's your will. So going through the 4-step, then it talks about my fears, I was afraid of everything, and then of course it talks about the sex inventory, which none of us have problems with. You can skip that section. You know, I'm just kidding ya. It's got us in more trouble than most things, let's face it. So then I do the 5th step, and the 5th step is I need to talk to another human being. Isn't it sufficient that I just go, hey God, I'm sorry? No, doesn't work that way. I need to humble myself and tell the truth to another human being, which preferably is your sponsor, just because that's usually the person going to help you with your amends. And the fourth step is this beautiful, you know, outline of what you did and you probably owe amends for. Don't listen to this stuff if you're not on these steps yet. If you're not on these steps, don't worry about it, because you know, when you get there, you'll be fine. 6 and 7. Yeah, we definitely have character defects and we have shortcomings. And, you know, I was taught, what do I get out of doing it? What would happen if I stopped doing it? Every character defect, I get something out of it. And once the owie, just like when drinking and drugging was a big owie, then I'll look at it. But it doesn't matter if it's hurting you. I would love to tell you if it's hurting you, it's a problem for me, but it's not. It's a problem when it's a problem for me. And then I'm willing to address it. Or looking at what it's like to be on the other side of my behavior. My husband has 3 beautiful kids, and they were 8, 12, and 16 when their mom passed away from alcoholism. And I started dating him, I don't know, a few months after that. And pretty quickly started telling you how to parent your children. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I have no kids. So when he broke up with me, because I was a bitch, I guess. And we were apart for 6 months. I call it the silent meditation where God fixed him. That I got to see how annoying and frustrating and, you know, how it might have made him angry when a person who did not have their own children told him how to parent his children, which he'd been with 8, 12, and 16 years. Right? Which, by the way, are phenomenal children. They're 29, 32, and no, 37 now. 33 and 37. They're incredible children. And I didn't like them very much because they were getting in my way. Okay? And I always said, you know, I had to fall in love with all of them. Bill had to fall in love with one person. I had to, you know, win them all over. But loving you is as easy as breathing. And that's the true story, baby. So if you don't do your fifth step, you might drink. If you leave something out of your fifth step, you might drink. You know, the ninth step amends, I think, require help from a sponsor, because I want to make amends for things I don't owe amends for, and I want to make amends for things that might cause you harm or say it in a way that might cause you harm. I'm sorry you were an asshole. I wouldn't have treated you like that if you weren't an asshole, right? No, no, no. I stand my side of the street. Under no conditions do we criticize such a person or argue. Hard on self, easy on others. You know, right off the bat in the book, it tells me that this whole thing's designed to give me, you know, remove the obsession to make me of maximum service to those around me. I was not happy with that. You were supposed to be of maximum service to moi because you'd cause so many problems, right? No, no, no. I'm so grateful Margaret's here. I haven't seen Margaret in person for a while because we're Zoom babies. But I absolutely adore you, and I've watched you stay sober through a lot and go through a lot. And, you know, that's that part of the program, watching another person get sober and stay sober and work with other people and go through hard things and stay sober and, you know, continue to have that spiritual contact. That is the yummy goodness of the program. You know, it's hard for me to be thinking about self when I'm busy thinking about you. And I know sponsorship isn't for everybody, or it may take a few years, but for me, it saved my life. I know I wouldn't be sober today without women in my life, because I'm by nature an isolator, and I don't want to talk to people. And when you have sponsees, you have to do all that. You know, talk to people and listen to their problems. So step 11, prayer and meditation. My husband has a wonderful prayer and meditation practice, and I finally have a wonderful prayer and meditation practice after all these years of being willy-nilly, and I was really good at prayer but not great at meditation, and there's lots of different types of meditation. I finally have one that I feel really great about. And so now, if you're one of my sponsees, you hear, well, what's your prayer and meditation practice like? You know, it rolls downhill. That's just all I'm saying. So, you know, that, you know, really acknowledging that, you know, my life isn't mine to control. You know, I have to rely on God. When people say, God doesn't give me more than I can handle, is BS. If I could handle it all, I wouldn't need God at all. Zero. I couldn't stay sober by myself. I couldn't get sober by myself. I couldn't have gone through helping my husband when he was sick. I couldn't have gone through being sick. Those are not things that Michelle, like, I got this. Don't you worry, God. I have this cancer thing handled. No! My life is such that when those things happen and on a daily basis, I have to rely on God. You know, and that's whatever it is to you, frankly. You know, I use God because it's shorthand, but who was it that said Yahweh? I think it was Ernie. There's lots of names for whatever that power is. You know, in the book it calls it the sunlight of the spirit and all kinds of different things. So don't be put off, because I wasn't highlighting anything about God in the book when I got sober. I didn't like religious people. So, and then it says something about, religious people were right. What? And what I learned is I'm not God, and I was being very judgmental of people. You know what I mean? Not my place. A lot of people get a lot of, you know, comfort from their religion and their church, and I support that. I was arrogant, you know, where it says that we were, it's not time, I just have a couple more minutes. You know, are we, you know, a certain antipathy that, you know, coming to the program with that contempt prior to investigation, you know, I know better. And you know what, the longer you stay sober, the less you should really know about most things. You know what I mean? I don't know what's best for you. Your spiritual path is not mine. You know, I know if you work the steps out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous with a sponsor and you're of service, clean house, trust God, work with others, you will stay sober one day at a time. If you stop doing that, just like if you stop going to the gym and lifting those weights, you're going to get flabby arms. I don't want flabby sobriety. You know what I mean? It's spiritual fitness, right? I have to stay spiritually fit, and this is how I do it. You know, the promises come true halfway through the ninth step. So if you're looking for the promises, you know, if you're new in sobriety and you didn't announce yourself, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous, Isaac's probably like, stop talking about me. You and me, man. I hope you're real uncomfortable. I hope early sobriety sucks so much you never want to do it again. It is easier to stay sober than to get sober. It is easier to just stay here and make your mistakes here sober. You're going to make mistakes anyway. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I was raised by wolves, and I don't act like a wolf today. And I don't try to blame you for my life. And I don't try to suck you dry. I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Trust God, clean house, work with others. And, I mean, 90 days. You don't look like the guy that was probably sleeping in the back of a truck. We don't look like our stories here, okay? Although it would be interesting if we all dressed like it at one point. So thanks for asking me to share, John. And happy holidays.
Thank you for sharing with us tonight. I'd like to thank the residents of the house and the Women's Auxiliary for the fantastic dinner that presented tonight. Thank you very much. And thank everybody for showing up tonight for the dinner, because there was a big crowd tonight. So thank you. Would you like to take us out, Michelle, in the prayer of your choice, and we'll close in the usual manner?